This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
So let's move on now to another ethical guideline. Remember, there were five, and they were essentially being, just a reminder that there's to respect and protect life, or not to kill, to be practice generosity, or to not take what's not offered to you, to be wise with your sexuality, to speak truthfully, kindly, non-divisively. That's what we worked on 2 weeks ago. And to be wise with what we consume. And that's the one I'm going to focus on now. So I'm skipping around. There is an order to them, but I'm skipping around. So let's talk about this next one, which is what I call wise consumption. So wise consumption, remember, these come out of like kind of a Buddhist formulation, although, as I mentioned, they're pretty much similar in most religious traditions and in secular ethics formulations as well. But this one is traditionally about not using drugs and alcohol. That's the way it's kind of it tends to be used, just as I said, most traditionally. Now, there are different interpretations of it, right, from lenient to more extreme. So there are some teachers who will say, never in your whole life must you ever take a taste of alcohol, for instance, or do drugs, because this would be breaking this guideline. There are others who say, no, it's about not using it in a way that clouds or confuses the mind. And so they're very different. So that means that some person might have a glass of alcohol and it completely confuses the mind, and another person might, and it's just, you know, what they do at dinner or whatever. So again, we go back to when I started working on that there is a personal place that we have to find. So for instance, if you're a person who's in recovery and drugs and alcohol, for instance, in like the 12-step world, no, you absolutely do not touch it. And that's your bottom line with this, right? And others, they have a different relationship to it. So the most important thing around it is to consider, how does our consumption cloud our mind and prevent clear seeing? Are we using these things we consume to avoid life, to avoid certain feelings, to check out, to to the point it could be harmful, like for those of us who struggle with addiction or have in our lifetime, what are we doing? Essentially, it's a question of like, what are we doing? What do we consume, and how does it affect us? So what types of substances, but now we're going to move not just from substances, because there's a whole lot of non-drug intoxicants that we can think of. So what types of activities and substances prevent us from connecting more fully with ourselves, with our relationships, with our families, with our communities? How does it affect when we meditate? Does it make us less likely to meditate? Does it make us more likely this is one of my teachers used to say, if you do drugs and alcohol, you're more likely to break all the other precepts, all the other guidelines, right? Which makes a lot of sense, because when you're not in charge of your faculties, you are, there's a likelihood that you might do something else that you regret. So that's kind of like the standard view, but I find it more interesting to look at this in terms of all sorts of things that we consume and that can cloud our mind. So those things are, I'll just give a list. This is a very partial list. Things like our phone, Our computer use, our any kind of media, period. Television, whatever it is, but it also doesn't have to be that. It could be eating, it could be incessant activity, it could be overwork, right? People can overwork in order to avoid feelings and to disconnect themselves from our families and relationships. People can overexercise, and that can get into like, and these are so some of these things are fine. They're good things to do. And obviously we have to eat, we have to work, most of us, we have to exercise, but it's when does it go into a place where we lose touch with our clarity of mind and our goodness of being, right? So anything in a way could be a wise or unwise consumption pattern. Now, can you meditate too much? I mean, that's a question people have often asked me over the years. And I would probably argue that it depends how you're using it, right? Like I would say, if you are avoiding something really important by going off and sitting in meditation all day long, it might be a problem. But I'm a meditation teacher, so usually I don't ever hear of that happening, but occasionally. So let's take a little bit of time to talk about the one that I think is the most challenging for people these days, and that is, what do you think? I'm waving the phone. So our media use, our media consumption, also news, I didn't mention news, but news is something that can very much cloud and confuse our minds. And most of the time the news is delivered through phones, but it can be delivered through television. It can be delivered through reading. And so it's useful to think about what is, it's kind of a, like, for me, what's important is getting at the intention behind the use of all of these things and asking the question of where does it affect, how does it affect my mind? So the phone in and of itself could be seen as like a neutral thing, and we can, all sorts of good things happen on the phone. We can listen to music, we can use our GPS, we can be in touch with our kids, we can, there's so many things that we can, but then there's also this very intense shadow side, which is where people get addicted to phones, that they're actually made in a sense to addict. And I know that is some, there's some controversy around our phones, addictive or not. I think for sure the sort of like dopamine hits that come with the inboxes and the texts and the kids on Snapchat all day long and social media. And and there's certainly a lot of research these days around the impact, the negative impact on social media, of social media, especially on, younger people. So for ourselves, like what's the edge around it? And this is something that I'm going to have you reflect on in a little bit, but I'll say a little bit more about how I've explored it myself, because I've noticed that it kind of crept up on me. There was a period of time where I was sort of a late adopter to these things, and then I was, and then it was slow. And then suddenly, do you all feel like, uh-oh, where's my phone all the time? Like, how many times do you go, where's the phone? Because it's become like a limb, it's become like a part of us. And there's so much there. So how do we take the goodness of it and get rid of the stuff that's not so good? And that's, it's really hard to do. So two things have been, I think have been supportive for me. One is to ask myself the question, like, what do I want my life to look like? And I started to notice that I was using it, I wasn't giving myself enough like downtime, because I was filling some of my downtime with the phone. So there was a period of time where it was news. And hang on one second. I'm in the middle of something. Yeah. Okay. Hold on one second, everybody. Sorry, one second. Okay, sorry about that. So what, now I forget what I was saying. I don't remember what I was saying.
News, too much news.
Oh yeah, too much news, right? So I was especially in the last like 6 months, just like checking the news constantly coming in. And finally one day I was like, why am I feeling so anxious all the time? And I realized it's because the news was just on notifications just coming in, coming in, coming in. And I finally went, oh, duh, turn off the notifications on the news, that app that's on my phone, which I did, and a huge difference. Because in my downtime, I would pick up the phone and start reading the news, and then it would make me anxious or angry. And I kept asking myself, and this is the question I want to really ask all of us, what is the kind of mind we want to have? What do we want our minds to be like? I don't want my mind in a state of high alert and anxiety. It doesn't mean, by the way, that I stopped paying attention to the news. I just limit it and I changed it. So basically what I do now is I get things in my inbox and I read them for like half an hour, 45 minutes in the morning, and that's it. I don't look at the news all day because it's just too stressful. And if something is really, really important, someone in my family is going to let me know. But so I feel like it's a good balance that I have found that to work with. So then the second thing I noticed is that the phone creep, where it starts to take over, is I was having less time of just kind of doing nothing. That during my nothing time, I might check the news or look at photos or, I mean, anybody, I don't know if anybody relates to this. Does anyone play like a little video game where you got to do Wordle, get the Wordle, and then you have to do connections, and then you have to do the mini, and then the spelling bee, and then the next thing you know, right? It's like 15, 20, 30 minutes have passed. So I started committing to like not. I took a lot of things off my phone. That really helped. And so I stripped it down. And I'm also like really committed to increasing my downtime. There's a book it came out, I think in the, gosh, I'm going to say like 2015. And it's called, what was it called? It was called Bored and Brilliant. And it has a lot about the science of why it's really important to be bored and how. Because we fill our time with and fill all the like the space, people are less creative, according to this, like the research that they're doing and the surveys that they did. And the reason is that when you get bored, your mind, like first it feels bored and it's usually incredibly uncomfortable. People hate to be bored. And that's why these phones are like magic. Great, I got my phone. I don't have to be bored. People don't have to be bored. I watch teenagers, including my own, and they're like, they don't have to be bored. Occasionally they have to be bored, and that's maybe when they're in the classroom, right? When the phones are taken away. But anyway, when we're bored, we have to tolerate the discomfort, which is really a mindfulness practice, a really useful mindfulness practice to tolerate the discomfort and then to, see what happens, because in the space of boredom, the mind starts to make new connections and see the world differently. But if you don't give yourself that space, the creativity is not going to come. And I really firmly believe this, both looking at the science of it and my own experience. Like, so there's two kinds of. There's wandering mind that is positive, and there's a wandering mind that is negative. And the sometimes it's called the default mode network, right? So there's a mind. I hope I'm getting this right, because sometimes this is it's a little complex. But basically, the brain can go on a function that's like an executive function where you're doing, accomplishing, achieving, getting things done, right? That's very common. It's a great thing that we do, but it needs to be balanced out. And the default mode network is when the mind goes into the more sort of dreamy, spacey thing, right? And that is problematic when it goes into a lot of like toxic mind wandering, going into the worst case scenario, fears, worries, anger, replaying all that, but there's a positive thing when we go into the daydreaming that leads to kind of creativity, soothing, relaxing, and then non-doing. So this is the invitation. I recommend this book. It's kind of an interesting book. The other book I recommend, the invitation is for you to check out for yourself, where has the phone taken over my life? And it might not be the phone for you. I'm just speaking the phone to the people where it's the phone. It might be your computer. It might be something else that you do, something else that you consume. But where does it take away the clarity of your mind? Where does it not lead to it? So another book that I like, also a little bit old, is called Break Up With Your Phone. And you can and her premise is not that you just throw your phone into the ocean, which at times I would say I would have loved to have done. But it's when you break up with someone, you can still have a nice relationship with them. They're just not your primary person. So she has a course, like a 30-day course. She even has a phone version of her course, like Break Up With Your Phone, using your phone, where you get text messages every day telling you, try this today. Turn off your notifications today and drop off the, I don't know, I can't remember the things, but that's interesting. That's Catherine Price's book, Break Up With Your Phone. So just the invitation again is it's all about who do we want to be? What do we want to, what kind of mind do we want to have? Where am I consuming things that are deteriorating the quality of my mind? Deteriorating maybe is too strong a word, but where is it? Where am I not able to see clearly? Where is it leading? What in my life is leading to clarity, leading away from the clarity of mind, and what's leading to clarity of mind? And that's where it also gets interesting, because you can also ask yourself the question, what other things can we do that promote the clarity of mind? So it doesn't have to be, remember, with these guidelines, it's not about don't do necessarily. It's also about what do we do? So for me, taking a walk in nature is really important. Having the downtime where I'm not feeding my mind with anything. What else? Connection with friends, really deep conversations. Things that are nurturing, that allow my mind to settle and come into a place of just well-being. And even my work, like the work can be do, 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 do. And I have to find places in my work life where I'm like, this is just time to be creative, to rest, to relax, and to be generative. Someone wrote, sometimes I find myself thinking, I can't meditate without my phone timer. Yeah. So you could get a clock. Remember those things? Watches, clocks? You've seen them before, right? There are options. That actually is one of the suggestions in one of the books I was reading. Get a watch, so you're not always reliant upon your phone and you're not picking it up 100 times a day. So those are just some guidelines. And as I said, it's not the same for everybody. And some of us have different things that are the places that cloud and confuse our minds. And so what I want to do is give us a chance to explore, like, where is it live for me? Where is it real? But if we were to explore how to work with our minds in these consumption patterns, what we would do is find an area to explore, and then make it be the thing you notice. So maybe you're going to notice paying attention to how much you need the phone. Like, that's an example. Or it could be related to drugs or alcohol, or it could be related to how your work habits, or it could be related to food, eating. I mean, there could be anything, but you choose an area. And if you want to do this, you can set a limit for yourself, like, I put down the phone at 6 o'clock or something. And then using your mindfulness practice, notice what it feels like. Notice when there's part of you goes, I can't stand it. I need to get my phone. I can't do this. So it's not to judge ourselves here and not to do it perfectly, but to notice what happens when we set these commitments for ourselves, feeling the underlying feelings, notice the craving, the object of craving, and then seeing how that goes, and then maybe acting differently or making different choices or seeing what becomes more of like a permanent thing. So I'm going to open it up now to see where you are with all of this, with this consumption. So I'm going to just also read the original. So the original guideline is knowing how deeply our lives intertwine. I undertake the training to promote the clarity of my mind by being wise about my consumption patterns. So it's quite broad, the way that that I see it. Suda wrote, I go to my resource list. Dopamine fasting. Do you mean, I'm not exactly sure what you mean, Suda. Do you want to share a little bit more in with the group?
Well, I have a list on my refrigerator. Like you just said that, go for walking and all that stuff is just written on there, what I can do when I'm bored. I do sometimes painting, so I go and take my watercolor out and I just start painting, or I play with my cat. So, things like that, or so I can avoid my boredness and, make myself more useful to do something. And dopamine fasting is, you just turn off your phone and you'll be happy.
Yes. I love that. I love what you're saying, that you have kind of, I think what happens is the mind gets into this thing like, if I, what, I don't have anything to do. What am I going to do? And so if we actually have really wholesome and skillful things that we can do as a backup, then it feels a little safer. Like, okay, I'm willing to let this activity go because I know that I'm going to hang out with my cat, you know? So I think that's a wonderful little tidbit, like a guideline that we can do. Yeah,
Thank you.
cool. Susan wrote, my boyfriend is addicted to YouTube and it affects our relationship a lot. Yeah, Susan, you know, this is the problem. This is a humongous problem, and I think it affects different, I mean, I don't want to get into like the whole analysis of like the different age groups, and there's certain, I think certain people are have more tendency, like I think, if forget it, you know what, I'm not going to make assumptions here, never mind. I was going to say if you're younger maybe you're more susceptible, if you're older maybe not, but I know plenty of older people who are also addicted to YouTube. So what I'm going to say is just that we this is an example of exactly what I'm talking about, that because your boyfriend is on YouTube, it's impacting his connection to you. And this is what all of us have to see. Like, what am I doing that's impacting connection? What am I doing? So it's not just how it affects my mind, but it affects other people, as your little thing that you wrote shows very, very clearly. And the problem is, you can't just say, hey, get off YouTube, because probably your boyfriend is going to say, no, I'm fine, everything's good. So this is, but you can really express how meaningful it would be if maybe he could cut back and you could talk to each other. I mean, I don't know whether, like, how open your communication is around this, but it might be useful even at some point to get outside support. Because it will affect your relationship. And if, you know, you see, I mean, all of us have seen it, and probably all of us have been at restaurants, whole families at a table, and every single person is on their phone, right? We've probably done it, you know? But what's happening to the relationship? What's happening to the connection? What do we value? And that's what I love about these guidelines. They invite us to go back to the question, like, what is important to me? What do I care about? And the one that I said earlier, what kind of mind do we want to have? So anyway, thanks for sharing that, and talk to him, you know, see what happens, and let me know. And also, if there's probably more I could say, but maybe offline if you want. I'm going to write the books because people asked. One is called Bored and Brilliant, and the other one is, but I can't remember who the author is. Yeah. Break Up With Your Phone by Katherine Price is the other one. I can't remember who wrote Bored and Brilliant. So I'm going to go down. Susan said, I can handle boredom at times. Yeah, sometimes boredom is no big deal. It's just I'm bored. So what? I honestly think we used to handle boredom a lot better in the pre-phone days. Someone was empathizing with you saying, I do that with YouTube too, and I'm committed to minimizing my usage. So that's awesome for those of you who are willing to do it. And probably the people in the room are the people who are willing to do it. And maybe the people that we are partnered with may not necessarily be, or maybe, but how do we share what kind of life we want to have with someone? It seems really important to do that. George wrote, it often appears like I'm surrounded by people who are constantly looking at their phones, including times when we go out to dinner with friends. That's what I'm saying. I struggle with whether or not I should ask them to put their phone away. I have no idea what words to use in those instances. Okay, there's a great game that you can play. Now, the problem is if you spring it on people, they might not like it. But if you let them know that this is what you would like to do, let's say you have a bunch of friends coming to dinner. Put a basket and say, I challenge you all to put your phone in the basket. Just do it. And let's see if we can do it. And then it goes into the basket and then it starts buzzing, right? And nobody knows whose it is. And then you have to kind of sit with it and just make it a game. Like, we can do it. I really, really want to talk to you. Or start having conversations with your friends. Like, how meaningful is it to you to go out to dinner and everybody's on their phone? Like, it's not. I mean, parents can set limits. Like, we have a rule, there's no phone at our when we're eating dinner together, right? There are those kinds of things. But we need to enlist our friends and family members to do it together because I think everybody's struggling in the same way. A few years ago, I would have a tech Sabbath where I would not look at the computer for the entire weekend and use the phone only for essential communication. Could still watch TV, but no aimless web browsing. Made the weekend seem much longer. So good or bad. Even watching TV is more relaxing when it's not on your laptop. I think that meant it was good. That's fantastic. And that's one of the recommendations that a lot of people who are looking at this say is tech Sabbaths. Like, if you do the breakup with your phone, she has you have take a weekend, a one day off, 24 hours with no technology and see what it's like. And a lot of people report just what you're talking about because there is once you have to get through the initial part, that kind of like, I can't stand it. What am I going to do? This is boring. And then you do it and you realize like, oh, I'm doing things that I'd never have time for. I mean, we spend so much time on our devices that we end up not having time to do things like meditate. It's crazy. One of the things that my brother does with his kids from time to time is he says, "Today we're going to have 1979 day." And that means like it's 1979. Their phones have not been invented. There's only like four TV shows, TV channels, and they're on at 8 o'clock, and that's it. And we're going to have a day where you just live in 1979. And the kids hate it. But they do it because they're forced to. And I will say this, I mentioned at the beginning that I was just teaching a retreat, a kind of a meditation program, like a 5-day retreat for families. And we make anybody under 18 get rid of their phone and not get rid of it, but put it in a box. We do actually a little ceremony. And the adults, we strongly recommend, but we don't force them. The kids, without fail, say how great it is that they're in this community of other teens who are not doing it. And if nobody's doing it, there's no pressure. I think it's because the pressure of the world of everybody else is doing it. Teens in particular feel like they have to do it. So, there's a lot of movements in school. A lot of things came out of that. The Jonathan Haidt book that came out, I don't know, last year, 2 years ago, Anxious Generation, that a lot of school systems have read. And I know my daughter's school, they're starting, no, it's a high school, no phones at school until the end of the day. So we have to build community around this. We have to be in conversation, connection. Okay, wait, more coming up. Oh yeah, yes, that's right. Someone gave it the, oh, that was not intentional. The bored and brilliant is the last person's last name is Zamorodi, I think. I was inspired by your positive framing as a challenge for the phone basket challenge. Yeah, do it. See if your friends can jump on. Like, let's do it, y'all. We can do this. Even if you just do it for an hour, see what happens. To minimize my smartphone time, I just look up at the sky. I'm also worried about smartphone-induced dementia. The sky time is my small habit for good health. I love that. Instead of looking down at the phone, we look up the sky. That's so beautiful. So it can be a whole meditation practice, right? There's meditation where you just open to the sky-like nature of our wide awareness. That's beautiful. Yeah, I don't know about smartphone-induced dementia. I don't know the research on that, but that could be a concern. All right. So let's do this. I want to do a short meditation where we reflect on what we want to do to work with these consumption patterns in our lives. Okay. So let's settle in a way that is relaxed, comfortable. Taking some breaths. Noticing what's here for you as we've been discussing these things. This is not hopeless at all. This is really actually quite workable. But it takes some perseverance. And you kind of always have to keep starting again. The phone creep is real. And whether it doesn't have to be phones, that is the issue. I said that. So let's just take a moment as we sense our body and mind and as we think about the consumption pattern. So, what is it in my life that is taking me away from clarity of mind, from myself? And also maybe taking away from connecting to others. So see what is it for you that might be your edge? Just reflecting for a moment. Could be the phone, could be food, it could be overwork, it could be drugs and alcohol, it could be the news, it could be social media, it could be, gosh, it could be anything. And now, as you think about this thing, as something comes to your mind, how does it feel when you're doing that activity? Like, what is it? See if you can remember. Just imagine yourself doing this activity and notice what it feels like in your body. Like, maybe there's adrenaline coursing through it, or it feels tense or tight, or maybe it feels good to zone out. Sometimes it does feel nice, just to notice. And if you were to do something related to this consumption pattern for this week, can you come up with a simple, not too, don't plan for like, I'm gonna put my phone away and not look at it or something, but something doable that you can possibly commit to this week. So let your creativity get really bored and let your creativity come. What might it be that I could do this week and could be really simple, like with my phone, I'm going to try that game once this week with my friends, put it in the basket, or I'm going to have no phones at my table for dinner, or I'm going to turn off my notifications, or I'm going to, I don't know, just let yourself, those are all phone related, but. What else is important for you that is taking away from your clarity of mind, taking away from connection, and what could promote it? And it might be what you decide to do is just something that brings more connection and ease into your life. It doesn't have to be about stopping something you're doing. It could be about enhancing something you're doing that brings you more joy. Like, I'm going to go out in nature more this week, or I'm going to spend more time with my cat or dog, or, so see what you want to do, something doable. As you contemplate doing that doable action, imagine doing it. Like, just imagine yourself doing it. And notice how that feels. So, taking a breath, feeling your body present, and then opening your eyes if they're closed. So, let us now put into the chat, if you wish, what you're planning to do. And also, the reason I do it is because we might inspire each other, because someone might have come up with something that they like better than what they came up for themselves. So, take your time and let us know what you're going to try to do this week. Meanwhile, I'll tell you that someone wrote, "I am 72 and I know what it was like without cell phones." To me, communication was so much better. We automatically looked at each other when we talked and listened. And now they have to teach that in class. It's very sad. So true. So true. It is. I totally agree. All right. So let's see what's coming in. Let's see. Okay. Intentional aspirational media appreciation on phone instead of mindless media viewing on phone, with the question, how does that affect my m mind? Love it. Sounds great. Turn off the phone a couple of times a day. Check emails less. Put a curfew on my social media, which is online Scrabble with my sisters and the New York Times games. Okay, curfew. Everyone probably knows you can set limits on your phone, and there's even like apps you can download apps to set limits on your apps. Decided to frame it as adding something positive, making time for drawing. I've started this effort twice before and always give up after a short time. If I make time for this, other useless activities will fall away. I know what you're talking about, Marielle. It's so true. We try to put something in and we do it for a little while, and then it just other things take over it. But let's keep reinforcing it, and we can reinforce it with each other here. Like, did you do it? Next week there's going to be accountability because I'm going to ask. Okay, let's see. And I love the idea of what you're saying. If I make time for something that's important to you, then it's less time for useless activities, and maybe they'll fall away. That's what you're saying. Turn off apps notification on my phone. All right. Communicate more often with my family. I tend to go for long periods of time without contacting them as that works for me, but I don't think it works for them. We'll be more attuned to their needs. It's beautiful. Let's see what happens. I'm going to try to do 30 minutes or less on social media per day for a week and see how that goes. Social media is such a distraction for me. I hear you. I'm sure you obviously are not the only one. And set a limit. Those phone limits, they're kind of stupid because it asks you, do you want to keep going? And then you can just say yes. But it makes you think. It's the pause. It's the 5 second pause that someone was talking to, an analogy and for the phone. So limit to 30 minutes, see what happens. Okay. And also remember, y'all, whatever you choose to do, if you do it and you're successful, celebrate it. If you do it and you're not successful, do not beat yourself up. Do not get angry at yourself. It's the force of habit is immensely powerful. And then you just forgive yourself. Okay, I did my best, and move and keep trying, keep going. Couple more. I'm going to try to sleep with my phone plugged in at the other side of the room. Will serve the double purpose of charging overnight and me not checking on it when I can't sleep. Yeah, that's kind of like a baseline that people they say could do is not have their phone on their bedside table. Get an alarm clock, put your phone either a different part of the room or in another room. And that I know that definitely helps me. I do not have my phone in my room. Otherwise, I'm gonna look at it. These things, they're designed to get you. They're designed to pull you in. You're fighting a lot of smart minds that know what they're doing here. Listen to music instead of playing games on my phone. Lovely. I'll try the game for an hour with my family. Excellent. I want to hear about it. Emerson talked about being silent in terms of spirituality, but it applies to basic living. So for me, staying away from the phone or TV for the morning, beautiful. I mean, people often say, no media first thing when you wake up. Do not pick up your phone. You know what? The one that I've started doing, I'm so glad I do now. I always get up and take my dog for a walk, and I used to like use that the news, and then I would start my day feeling horrible before I even meditated. So now I do not take my phone on my early morning dog walk, and it's very nice. Planning and muting my phone as much as I can. Awesome. So it looks like most people, it was related to phones, but there are a few of you who are going to do some other things, and that looks great. All right. So I'm excited. Oh, one more. I'm going to make a list on paper of things I want to look up during the day, then just look it up all at once in the evening. Ah, that's interesting. Gotta fight the urge to know right away. It's so interesting, that thing that's like, I have to know if that celebrity is still dating that other celebrity. It's really important. Then we think it's so important, and then we grab the phone and we're just then get sucked down a rabbit hole. So I love that idea. Look it up later, once a day. Great. And others of you do the same thing. Okay, so we're coming to the end of our class. I love all the creativity and all of the great ideas. And so let's just take one last moment to sense our body and mind. Maybe you have a new plan based on what someone else said. And just to offer yourself a little bit of kindness, a little bit of kindness. Like, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to be really kind to myself. And know that there's like 70, 80 people on here who are also doing it with you, or their version of it. And so we have solidarity. And take a breath, feel your body, and send out some kindness to people here and elsewhere as we all work towards a heart and mind of clarity, a life of connection and community, living the values that are meaningful and important for us in our life, in the world. Okay, everybody. Thank you so much. And I will see you, I'll see you next week, and we'll check in about how this went. Okay. All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.